This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Today we're going to hear from satirist P.J. O'Rourke, who has described himself as a Republican turned communist turned Republican, and from Thomas Frank, who was conservative as a teenager and now places himself on the left. We'll start with Frank. He's the author of the new book, What's the Matter with Kansas? How Conservatives Won the Heart of America. The book tries to answer this question: why has the conservative movement won over so many working Americans when, Frank says, the movement's policies are just making the rich even richer? Frank uses his home state of Kansas as the case study. He says 100 years ago, Kansas was a reliable hotbed of leftist reform movements, but now it's turned to the right. Frank is the founding editor of The Baffler, a journal of cultural criticism. His previous books include One Market Under God and The Conquest of Cool. In his new book, he examines what's often described as the culture wars. He says it's instructive to consider how the meaning of the word elite has changed.
I live in Washington now, and here in Washington, you're constantly hearing people say that it's, whenever, say, for example, Democrats start talking about the CEO wages or something like that, the Republicans will respond by saying that's class warfare, and class warfare is not okay. But if you listen to these same Republicans for very long, you'll start hearing them use the term liberal elite. And they bash the liberal elite very effectively. They do a really good job at this. This is sort of the centerpiece of their approach to middle American voters for a very long time now, is to position themselves as an enemy of the elite, as class warriors, if you will, as allies of the common man in his battle to, you know, overthrow these haughty, overeducated Ivy League types.
Now, in trying to puzzle through in your book why this idea of the elite liberal media has become such an appealing target to so many people, you suggest that maybe it means that that people are being told that they're the salt of the earth, they're the beating heart of America, you know, that the elite liberal media, they're disconnected, they're elite, and it makes other people feel more authentic. And you said that combines with the narcissism of victimhood. So anybody could be a victim and everybody becomes authentic who isn't part of that elite liberal media.
Right. And yes, you've summarized it very well. And let me just point out that these are terms, authenticity and victimhood, that the right, that are generally applied to people on the left and to like academic theory and stuff like that. And what's fascinating to me is that the conservative movement culture feels that that the people who do have authenticity are your average salt of the earth, blue-collar Americans who live in the heartland, this kind of thing, the grassroots people, what Nixon called middle America, the silent majority. Now, if these people actually went out and voted Democratic, you understand, if these people were liberals, they would instantly lose this authenticity. Let me just skip ahead a little bit and say that the contemporary iteration of this theme is the red state, blue state literature that you see all over the place, especially here in Washington, where this is real sociology, to divide America up into these two profiles: the red state people on the one hand, who have authenticity and who aren't, you know, ashamed of themselves and what they do and who work with their hands and who have all the sort of Boy Scout virtues. You know, they're humble, they're God-fearing, they're patriotic, and they're hardworking. And then on the other hand, you have the blue state people who are, this is the word they always use, effete, who are deracinated, who, you know, are driven from fad to fad, who tend to have very pretentious college degrees, you know, who have funny little affected pets, who drink lattes and French wine and this sort of thing. And so that's the authenticity divide. And this is a very common theme. Now, what's fascinating to me about all this is that it redefines social class. Instead of being a matter of your economic position, who you work for, the conditions of your employment, class is about authenticity. It's about what you wear, what you eat, what kind of car you drive, you know, a Crown Victoria or, on the other hand, a Volvo, you know. And so it makes class is no longer an economic phenomenon. It's a cultural phenomenon.
Well, your new book is called What's the Matter with Kansas? And Kansas is the state that you grew up in. You've looked into your home state. What do you think Kansas symbolizes now politically?
there's sort of a journalistic convention that Kansas is a microcosm for the country as a whole. And back, some years ago, whenever the journalist needed somebody to symbolize the average American, the regular guy, they would go to Kansas. And it's true, the state is, to this day, demographically very, very average. It's right in the middle of the pack in a number of ways. And it's also right in the middle of the country, right? It is the heart of America. Now, what fascinates me about the state is that its politics in the last 15 years have swung radically to the right. Now, it's always been a pretty Republican state, but it was a kind of moderate to progressive Republicanism. And what happened in the last 15 years is that the Republican Party there has had this kind of a populist uprising on the right. It's a state that grows that's growing more conservative and more Republican, I suppose, by the day. But it's a place where it's being driven to the right by angry, working class, blue collar voters.
What are some of the turning points, do you think, that led the Republican Party of Kansas in that direction?
It always comes back to the values issues, and in Kansas the big one was abortion. And you remember Operation Rescue in the 1980s. This was a militant pro-life group that would go to various cities around the country and do these dramatic, they would surround abortion clinics and chain themselves to fences and this sort of thing. And in 1991 they decided to descend on Wichita, the biggest city in Kansas, and they did this, and they were there for quite a while. They call it the Summer of Mercy. And this happened because in Wichita there was an abortion clinic that performed late-term abortions. I believe it was one of the only ones in the entire Midwest that did that. And that was also sort of a relic of Kansas's, of another side of the Kansas personality, which was that Kansas in the old days was always in the forefront on women's issues. It was one of the first states to have women's suffrage, this sort of thing. So anyhow, Operation Rescue came to Wichita, and the moderate leaders of the state, the moderate Republicans who were sort of dominated the state, were horrified by what these guys were doing in Wichita. This was a nightmare for them. They're pro-choice and all this sort of thing. Anyhow, the conservative rebels in the state, and there had been conservatives before, or right-wingers, just not very many of them, they saw their opportunity and they began signing people up at the Operation Rescue rallies. They signing people up to run for precinct positions in the Republican Party. And they really took the party over from the ground up. Regardless of what you think about their politics, it was grassroots democracy in action, and in some ways very inspiring. They were going against the established opinion. They were constantly being denounced by the newspapers, and yet they persevered in what they believed to be the right, and they won. And Wichita, which is a blue-collar city with a lot of labor unions in it and had a Democratic congressman at the time, they got rid of him in 1994 and replaced him with a conservative Republican congressman. And it remains a very conservative place to this day. Then there are other issues, but it's always about cultural issues. And the most spectacular one was in the late 1990s, the conservatives were looking for a new issue to rally their followers, and they settled on evolution, the teaching of evolution in the schools, and they staged a big battle over this. And they lost that time.
Now, you describe yourself as a former Reagan youth. What drew you to President Reagan and to the conservative movement when you were in your teens?
Well, it's funny because there's been all these obituaries and stuff, and I've been thinking a lot about the man and what I liked about him when I was a kid. And it's often hard to put yourself back in those, to remember what it was like in the 1970s. But for me, at least, and for the kind of adults that I spent my time around, it was this period of national decline. And everything was going wrong. And you remember Jimmy Carter? He basically just was like this very pessimistic figure, very morose, very sad. There was nothing we could do about anything. Things were out of our hands. And here was Ronald Reagan, this guy who believed in, and I mean really believed, with almost religious conviction, believed in the kind of the myths, believed in the mythic America of sort of, you know, Hollywood during the Code, you know, this sort of 1950s America where everything was in its place and everything worked right. And he was also so wonderfully optimistic about everything. And somehow my idealism was sort of captured by Reagan's idealism, and I became a young conservative. And I, you know, his idea that that government intervention in the economy and taxation and all the sort of things that had, you know, happened and that had happened since the New Deal were in fact leading us down the road to statism. That really rang true for me as a kid. Now, then, when you get older, you know, it's this idealistic perception of the world of business and of and his attitudes about how things worked, they just shatter on your first contact with the real world. But you know, his evocation of Middle America and business optimism, these two things combined, it rang true for the teenager in me.
When you became a young conservative, what about the values that came along with that? Did you believe in the kind of personal values, the religious values, the moral values?
Well, it's never been precisely clear that Reagan himself believed in those things. This is one of the sticking points that, well, I mean, it doesn't really bother members of the conservative movement, but it should, that Reagan always claimed to be anti-abortion and never did anything about it. On a lot of the cultural issues, he never did anything. And this is one of the earmarks of the conservative populism that I try to emphasize in the book, that their leaders never deliver. They constantly rally the troops using these social issues, these issues like abortion or evolution or guns or whatever, and or school prayer or the Ten Commandments or I don't know what the next one is going to be, gay marriage or something like that, and they never deliver on these things. Once they're in office, all they ever do is is deliver on the economic front. Merrill Lynch gets what they want, right? But these guys down in Wichita do not. They school prayer never comes back. Abortion is never halted. You never get to put up a Ten Commandments monument in the courthouse. The idea is ridiculous. And yet somehow the faith of the true believers, it isn't shattered. It doesn't break. They don't say, well, you know, maybe our leaders are giving us a line here. Maybe they really don't care about this stuff. That never happens. And Reagan is the perfect example of that. He never delivered on this front. And yet, you know, he's still lionized by that kind of conservative. If you think about it for very long, it's amazing to me that the conservatives have been able to capture the values question for themselves. The fact is that all this culture that surrounds us and that disgusts them, whether it's Hollywood movies or the products of the record industry or MTV or advertising or the sitcoms on TV, these things are not made by the ACLU. These things aren't made by the Supreme Court. These things aren't made by liberals. These things are made by business. These things are an expression of the needs and cultural requirements of business in the same way that a McDonald's hamburger is, or in the same way that a Boeing 737 is. These things are the products of this capitalist system that the Republicans, you know, even although the Republicans, the conservatives, even though they rail against these things, and not just rail against them, this is the bread and butter of the conservative revolution is saying no to the culture that surrounds us. Even though they do that, on the other hand, all they want to do is give these, you know, deregulate, lower taxes, make these people richer and richer and richer. It's a contradiction that's at the very heart of the conservative worldview.
So would it be fair to say that while conservatives condemn elite liberal media, you have your own problems with the media, but your criticisms aren't that the reporters are liberal or that the networks are liberal. Your criticism is that business decisions tend to influence at least editorial decisions,
yeah.
tend to influence what the product is.
Yeah, they win out, of course. And this is true. I mean, there's liberals in the media. There's liberals everywhere. I'm a liberal. But here's the thing. The whole theory about liberals in the media, and this gets us back to a question that you asked earlier, you've got this contradiction at the heart of conservatism, that on the one hand, they are the pro-business part of the American political spectrum. They are militantly pro-business. They want to let the free market be free to do its thing. And we all know about this. This is what the new economy is all about. This is the whole idea of globalization. Let the free market do its thing. Laissez-faire, right? On the other hand, they keep getting reelected by railing against the culture, by the culture wars, by deploring the culture that surrounds us. Well, there's only one way to resolve this contradiction, and the contradiction being that business creates this culture that they despise. How do you get out of this contradiction? You get out of it by, again, draining the economics out of your worldview. You don't talk about the economics. You don't talk about the fact that it's business culture. Instead of talking about the elite that actually runs things in America, you invent this phantom elite, this liberal elite. And so instead of culture and the newspapers and TV shows and record industry and what have you being expressions of capitalism, of business, they're expressions of liberalism. And so liberalism is this kind of shadowy force that is everywhere and is motivating things all the time, but can never really be pinned down, and it certainly can't ever be removed from office. It's this ruling class that is in power always, no matter what we do, and no matter how we revolt against it. And this is sort of the heart of conservative movement culture, is that you can win all the elections you want, but the liberals, they hang on, and they're always, skulking about influencing things, this liberal elite.
We've been talking about, the right versus the left and, the red states and the blue states. I'm wondering if one of the things that troubles you isn't just division between liberals and conservatives or the right and the left, but rather the sense that sometimes it seems in America people have become much more ideologically driven and mm-hmm. and almost less willing to think through every event independently, but would rather prefer to see it through an ideological framework
prism.
And kind of make up your mind beforehand whether this is a good thing or a bad thing, as opposed to examining it on its own merits.
Yeah. I know what you're talking about mainly through my experience with the conservatives, and they do have a very very elaborate, very well-constructed, and pretty much airtight vision of the way that the world works. This is, if you're part of the movement culture there, you've got an explanation for everything. And this is very powerful. And it would sometimes start to draw me in when, I'd be reading their, doing nothing but reading conservative listservs for a month or, reading their magazines or talking only to conservatives. By that I mean hard right movement conservatives, and their vision of the way the world works, in which liberals are always pulling the strings and everything is happening because liberals have made it happen, and they're always manipulating us and this kind of thing, and you're constantly the victim. All you can do in life is protest and get angry about things, and everything in the world is evidence of the liberal the liberal elite's power over you and power over the world. For example, there's a book that came out in the 90s called Unlimited Access by a guy who was who worked at the Clinton White House. He was an FBI guy who worked at the Clinton White House, and he really disliked Bill Clinton. It was one of the first big Clinton-bashing books. But what fascinates me about it is that the things that he objects to about the Clinton administration, it was every little damn thing. It was like he saw a guy wolfing yogurt in the cafeteria line before paying for it. He saw one of the Clinton staffers had a messy office. One of the Clinton staffers didn't, return his phone call. Another Clinton staffer, had a funny way of talking or something like that. And he even says one of his fellow officers passes this along, that Hillary Clinton looked at him wrong. And so even on the most quotidian level, right, and the most everyday level, they have an explanation for things. And if you get involved in this movement culture, it's like, my neighbor mows his lawn funny. I think it's because he's a liberal. Another example. This one's kind of funny. We got a letter at the Baffler one time from a guy who was crossing a street somewhere, and a guy in a car rolled down his window and said, "Get out of the way, you damn liberal." And he was like, how did the guy know I was a liberal? And has liberal just become this curse word? And I think clearly for a big part of America, it has. And it is just this, you know, it explains things on everywhere from the highest level to the most minute everyday level.
Well, Thomas Frank, thank you so much for talking with us.
Hey, it's my pleasure. Anytime.
Thomas Frank is the author of the new book, What's the Matter with Kansas? How Conservatives Won the Heart of America. He's also the founding editor of The Baffler, a journal of cultural criticism.